5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The International Catalytic Sound Festival comes through Chicago, Illinois, October 14th through the 17th at Elastic Arts. Some of the artists performing are multi-reed player Joe McPhee, violinist Mark Feldman and drummer Tim Daisy, percussionist Claire Rosset, and guitarist Steve Marquette. The Catalytic Sound Festival is taking place every weekend this year in various cities around the world, including Amsterdam and Washington, D.C. For more information, catalyticsound.com. The Latin Grammy 2021 nominees have been announced. Sol Swing and Salsa Plus, both by Ruben Blades and Roberto Delgado and Orquesta, for Album of the Year and Best Salsa Album of the Year, respectively. To view the nominees for Best Latin Jazz Jazz Album and more information on the Latin Grammys that will air on Thursday, November 18th, Grammy.com. Saxophonist Ravi Coltrane is the guest performer of tonight's Jazz and Arts Bash, a benefit concert in White Plains, New York, presented by Arts Westchester. For more information, artswestchester.org. New England Conservatory's Contemporary Improvisation Department hosts a live performance by three-day artist-in-resident, guitarist, composer, and improviser Mary Halverson tonight, October 7th at 8 p.m., inside of Jordan Hall in Boston, Massachusetts. Tonight's performance will be broadcast worldwide on Friday, October 22nd. And tomorrow evening, Friday, October 8th, a streamed concert recorded on Thursday, September 23rd of NEC's visiting artist-in-residence bassist Dave Holland with NEC students. For more information on both events, necmusic.edu/events. This is the closing week of the exhibit, Moki Cherry. Communicate how? Paintings and Tapestries, 1967 to 1980, at Corbett vs. Dempsey in Chicago, Illinois. The closing concert features reed player Ken Vandermark and drummer Hamid Drake. For more information, corbettvsdempsey.com. The Letter One Rising Star Jazz Award is open for submissions. This from Downbeat Magazine. The award presents an opportunity to win a tour of seven shows at seven jazz festivals in Europe for the European winner and 10 shows at major jazz festivals in the United States and Canada for the winner of the North American edition. Both tours will take place in summer of 2022 and are accompanied by a full year of public relations and marketing support courtesy of the Air Artist Agency. Submissions are open until midnight on October 30th, with winners announced in mid-January 2022. For more information, L1RisingStarsJazzAward.com. Keyboardist and composer Robert Glasper begins his 33-day, 66-show residency at New York City's Blue Note Club on October 1st. Performing tonight, Thursday, October 7th through October 10th, the group August Green, featuring rapper and actor Common, Glasper, and drummer Carriam Riggins. October 12th and 13th, a tribute to Wayne Shorter with saxophonist Marcus Strickland, drummer Kendrick Scott, trumpeter Kayon Harold, and bassist Vicente Archer. And October 14th through the 17th, bassist Michelle Nadegancello joins Glasper. For more information, bluenotejazz.com. A free outdoor event at the Kingston Library in Kingston, New York, tonight, October 7th at 5 p.m. Saxophonist Eric Lawrence, bassist Michael Bizio, and drummer Harvey Sorgen. For more information, kingstonlibrary.org. This Friday and Saturday night, October 8th and 9th at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, guitarist Dave Stryker's quartet performs two sets, Jared Gold on organ, McClenty Hunter on drums, and Joe Doubleday on vibraphone. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. And new releases. Two that are out tomorrow are vocalist Kurt Elling's Super Blue on Blue Note and pianist Craig Taborn's Shadow Plays on ECM. Other new releases that are out now, the Kate McGarry and Keith Gans Ensemble's What to Wear in the Dark on Resilience Music Alliance, guitarists Carlos Barbosa Lima and Johannes Tonio Kresch's Manicero on Zoho, and Happy Time Orchestra's self-released Of This World. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My guests today are trumpeter, composer, band leader, and educator Alex Pope Norris and trombonist, composer, band leader, arranger, and educator Ed Neumeister. Norris's third release as a leader and debut release on Steeplechase Records is titled Fleet from the Heat and is out now and is a love letter to New York City. Neumeister's What Have I Done on his own Maestro Music becomes available on October 15th. Thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Glad to be here.
Very glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So let us begin with how you two are similar artists. First, you're both brass players.
Right.
Yes.
You're also both currently either in or around the New York City area. Ed, you've been in the New York City area since about 1980. And Alex, I guess there was a 4-year gap where you were out of New York.
That's correct.
I had a gap too, even longer.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Yeah. You had a very remarkable gap.
Well, I don't know about remarkable, but I was teaching at the university in Graz, Austria for 17 years.
That's a gap.
It's a gap from more or less 2000 until 2017. And then in between that, I actually lived in LA for about 5 or 6 years.
Well, that I didn't know, Ed. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I was there. I was more or less pursuing film scoring, and I was kind of in that world for a minute.
Oh, wow. That's a hell of a world. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Both of you are veteran sidemen of various ensembles and musical genres. Alex, you've played in big bands, small groups. You've been involved in Latin jazz projects.
Oh, yeah.
And Ed, you're playing stretches back to when you were a teenager, becoming a professional musician in the Bay Area of San Francisco, collaborating with Jerry Garcia and backing up Chuck Berry and Sarah Vaughan and Frank Sinatra, and then eventually landing in New York City again and becoming a first call for Lionel Hampton and the Duke Ellington Orchestra.
As well as the Mel Lewis Jazz Orchestra.
Yeah. And Mel Lewis, yep.
And Jerry Mulligan, and yeah, it kind of goes on and on.
Yeah. You're both educators. Alex, you are currently teaching in the Jazz Studies Department at the Peabody Conservatory of Music.
Okay, I regret you have you have a late bio. I as of 2018 I was no longer associated with Peabody. What happened is there was a bit of a seismic shift in the jazz faculty, and the great Sean Jones is now the head of jazz, and you know, we play the same instruments, so
got it. Okay, thank you for that update.
No problem.
And Ed, you're currently teaching at the New School, City College of New York, NYU, and William Patterson University.
That's basically right. The City College, Corona took a hit on my City College class. So that's sort of right now taking a break until the enrollment goes back up. But officially, I'm still a professor there.
Okay, cool. And last but not least, both of you are, well, you know, you're maintaining stable, long time ensembles. Alex, you're celebrating 10 years with your quintet.
That's right.
And Ed, let me see if I have this right. One of your longstanding groups is your trio with vocalist Jay Clayton and pianist Gary Versace.
That's right. Yep.
Okay. All right. So now that we've run that down, and since you two know each other, I'd like for you to tell us what's different about you. Let's start with your ensembles. I mean, if we look at the numbers, quintet, 5 people, trio, 3. Let's start with those ensembles. Why don't we start with Ed, talking about the trio?
Well, the trio is really Jay Clayton's project, the singer. But we've been together for 20 years now, first with the Austrian pianist, Fritz Power. And that resulted in the CD that was released a year ago. So that's a really fun project. And we have several concerts coming up in the future, in the near future. But that's just, you might say, the small side of my palette as a leader, because I have a quartet. The new quartet record CD is coming out presently in another week or so. And I have an octet, and I also have a jazz orchestra. So I've got a whole gaggle of ensembles that I try to juggle.
Yep. And Alex, you are with, and let me see if I can run this down correctly, tenor saxophonist Ari Ambrose.
Yes.
Pianist Jeremy Manassia.
Manassia. Yeah.
Bassist Paul Gill.
Yes.
And drummer Brian Flutie.
Flutie. Yeah.
10 years.
Yeah. I've known all these guys in various settings for well over 20 years. We've been friends a lot. We've all played in different bands together. Paul Gill and I kind of came up together in the Baltimore area. And I also knew Ari when he was like a super talented young tenor player in the Washington area, because he was nearby us. And Jeremy is one of the first people I met when I moved to New York and started at Manhattan School as a student in 92. And Brian and I have been friends for roughly the same time. And we've been in many bands together, not just jazz bands, but some of those retro swing bands of the late 90s. And we've all been on the road together. We've all been in the studio with various projects. And when I moved back to New York in 2008, I kind of thought to myself, I want to put a band together with my friends, and not just, oh, he has to be a friend, like friends, friendship only. I'm not saying that. All these guys really play their behind off, and we all come from a stylistic place, which I guess is modern, straight ahead, emphasis on the tradition, but I feel like we all got our own voice also.
Alex, Fleet from the Heat, your debut release on Steeplechase is, quote, a love letter to New York City. The title of each composition is really snappy and a few familiar refrains. No fair, it's mine. What, normal?
Yeah.
You found some humor in these times. Are you finding others who are becoming more upbeat about performing and sharing their music now?
I am. It's quite remarkably so. And it's kind of fun right now. It's an exciting time in the sense I'm seeing a lot of musicians, you know, get back to what they're doing. It's a little frantic right now. I kind of wonder if we're all just kind of making up for lost time. But it's exciting at the same time. In fact, just yesterday I was in Boston doing playing a gig, like sort of a private party event, and it was fun. It was outdoors at a really beautiful venue, and I was glad to do it. But I was like, you know, coming back not only to make this interview, but I have my CD release show at Smalls tonight. You know, things are dramatically hectic right now.
Wait a minute. Whose party and why wasn't I invited?
I'm sorry.
All right. You know, I'm not going to put you on the spot. That's all right. Sorry. I know Boston. I'm from Massachusetts.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I spent the better part of my life in Massachusetts. So,
wow.
While I've got you, Alex, what's the story behind this one composition, the famous original Pandemic Suite?
You know, I'm sure Ed can relate to this because Ed's been in New York longer than me. It is a bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing. One thing I noticed during the pandemic is everyone was coming up with big pandemic projects. You know, the pandemic suite, the pandemic blues, the pandemic opera, the pandemic ring cycle, whatever. It was just getting kind of like, wow, everyone's writing something about the pandemic. So I thought about the fact that, you know, with the famous original Ray's Pizza, there's like 19 locations of the famous original Ray's Pizza. Like, which one is the actual original? So I thought that would be kind of my little joke. Yeah. My pandemic suite's the original one. It's not, of course. So it's kind of a nod to the famous original Ray's Pizza. No one knows which one's the original. So I'm kind of like, yeah. Exactly. So it's more like, I know I'm not original. I'm just throwing my hat in with everybody else.
Ed, yep. What Have I Done, which, as you said, is coming out in a few weeks, as it has been written, is thought-provoking music for curious ears, music that challenges and inspires. Were the compositions for this release written for a specific listener? And if so, what do you expect for a response for this release?
That's a great question. Well, the specific listener, I really have to just put myself in the audience because that's who I'm really writing. That's who I aim to please. And if I can be, you know, not just satisfied, but if I can be excited about my own music, then I imagine that somebody else might too. My taste is pretty eclectic, and I write, compose a lot of classical music in addition, but I have this background in sort of rock and funk and jazz and avant-garde and straight ahead. So those are the ears that I'm hoping will perk up when they hear this. It's one of my goals in life is to not be normal.
Take mine that. Too.
So I don't consider whatever that means, you know. So stretching the envelope a little and working some other areas that are maybe not covered as much as I'm talking about stylistic areas or combining that are not maybe as covered as often.
From your recent Jazz Times profile, you said that, quote, the pandemic gave me the opportunity to do a lot of composing, but just focusing this time on the quartet. During your time as a member of the first BMI Jazz Composers Workshop, composing seems to have taken over a lot of the gray matter of your brain. Was it because there wasn't enough in the repertoire for the groups you were performing with?
No, it wasn't so much that. If because I was playing Duke Ellington's music with Duke Ellington Orchestra and Billy Strayhorn's music and Thad Jones and Brooke Meyer's music with Mel and Jerry Mulligan's music. But one of the kind of impetus of writing for these bands is there wasn't enough trombone solos. So if I wrote a chart, I could put a trombone solo in there. That's one way to give me a solo.
There you go.
But the other thing is I've always been really just a serious musician, and I didn't want to be just a trombone player. And in my improvisations, especially, I didn't want to sound like a trombone player improvising. I wanted to sound more like a composer whose instrument was the trombone. And then once I was always composing my whole life, but once I kind of got deep into it through the BMI experience, studying with Bob Brookmeyer and Manny Album and also Bill Finnegan, I just got deeper and deeper into that world. And that was really the main reason. It just sort of opened up a whole realm of possibilities for me as a musician.
Where do you two musically meet? And what I mean by that is you've played in a lot of the same ensembles. You both teach. Your releases are both being promoted by Red Cat Publicity.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I had to get them in. Hi, Jason.
Oh, man, yeah.
Got to.
So, again, where do you two musically meet? Since I have you both here on Zoom, talk amongst yourselves.
Go ahead, Alex.
I mean, I wish I knew more of Ed's work. I mean, what's always striking to me is I do remember playing in the Vanguard band. I was struck by a lot of his arrangements about how, you know, special, unique, and different they are. I'm thinking specifically, I might have mentioned this to you, Ed, I can't remember. I believe it's your arrangement of Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square.
Uh-huh.
Yep. I mean, because I play that tune a lot as a ballad, and you just came up with this amazing rendition of it at a medium tempo that has, I think like kind of an odd meter section or like, but some really interesting counter melodies. One thing I find is remarkable about Ed is, you know, you can't pigeonhole him. You hear that arrangement or hear him solo on one of his compositions, you might think, oh, wow, he's a modern guy. And, you know, that's his bag. But then you probably get this too much, Ed, and I'm sorry, but you got to be just about one of the best plunger players I know. You really play that tricky Sam Nanton stuff as good as the people who only do that. And so to me, like, you're a guy that has a huge historical breadth in your playing. And I kind of like, I like to look at myself in the same way. I mean, I love, my three favorite trumpet players are Freddie Hubbard, Woody Shaw, and Lee Morgan. That's sort of like my nucleus stylistically. But I also love Kenny Dorham. I love Fats Navarro. And I love Roy Eldridge too. And so I guess I like people who have a large historical breadth within their own personal style. And I think I'd like to think I share that with Ed.
Well, I would agree with that. What I can add to that, as far as my experience playing with Alex, is that I guess we met each other at the Vanguard with the big band there. I think so. That's what I seem to remember. But we've played gigs here and there over the years, different stylistic things. And what I always what's admired about Alex playing is that he is always spot on. I mean, it's as a ensemble player and a creative soloist and copping the vibe as a soloist of the arrangement, not just pulling his bag. What happens sometimes where the soloists just sort of pull out their little bag of tricks, you know, but Alex is always right in there in the music. And I always dug that about him, and I still do. And I think we do have a wide range, both of us. I have to say, I live in Newark, downtown Newark, and the plaza, my corner where I live, was just designated Woody Shaw Jr. Plaza.
I read that somewhere. So that's
I read that too. Yeah.
Wow. So you live near that, Ed?
I live on that corner, basically. Yeah, I'm right there. Sweet.
Dang, I gotta come. I'm gonna come visit it. Then I'm coming over to your house.
Okay, you're invited anytime. And this really, they designated that just within the last few months. It's not, it's really a recent thing. I was a big, huge Woody Shaw fan. And actually, I didn't listen to trombonists when I turned, I don't know, 28, 29 years old. I made a conscious decision to not listen to other trombonists. And so my major influences as a player, after listening to more or less nothing but trombonists, were Woody Shaw is one, and Freddie Hubbard is the other. Booker Little was a huge influence on me. So, of course, I listened to saxophones. Also, John Coltrane, Eric Dolphy, and piano players, all the great piano players. And those were really, they became sort of my major influences after I decided to really pursue my own path, my own sound, my own stylistic preferences.
Let me pick up on that sound idea and talk about some of the students, your brass playing students. What part of the country are they coming from?
Well, for me, you have to ask the question a little differently, because it's what part of the world are they coming from?
Yes.
There you go. Yeah.
So I have students from Israel, several students from Israel. I have a student, he's a brand new student, so he's from Asia somewhere. I don't know exactly what country. And I have also students from the New York area and from all across the country and basically all across the world. So it's interesting now, not just now, but the last 30 to 40 years, jazz has become such an international musical language that there really are great players all over the world.
Oh yeah, that's very true.
But with that said, New York is still Mecca. It's still not just jazz Mecca, I would say the creative music world. This is where the center of the creative music world is, for me at least, and that's one of the reasons why I'm here.
I always leave the last word to my guests. So if there's anything I didn't ask you, something you'd like listeners to know about you. Alex, why don't you go ahead?
In the last several years, I've had an intense career in terms of sideman work. A lot of big bands, a lot of Latin jazz things, but also with Pat Martino's group. And I love all of it. I don't get to stretch out too much as a leader. Some of it's deliberate. A lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm so busy with the sideman thing. And when I was teaching at Peabody, my schedule there was intense. So I haven't pushed my leader world very much. A lot of it's because it's a bit different than a lot of my sideman work. This project I got, it's a very straight ahead project. I try to write simple tunes that are interesting, but simple tunes that swing. And it's not terribly innovative, I don't think, but I think it's personal, which I guess are two different things. But I hope that the listener can take a listen to my project and enjoy themselves.
And Ed.
Yeah, interesting. Moving back to New York 3 years ago, I spent the better part of 20 years only being a leader. I was traveling as a soloist and I was doing my own tours. And one of the things I missed about that was being a sideman or side person on other people's projects. I did a few things when people would come to Europe, but I was pretty picky about it. And I think one of the more interesting things about my musical life now is that I'm really getting a chance to play with other people and other artists and other bands. And I'm really enjoying that a lot. Of course, I'm continuing to pursue all my solo projects, and I'm composing and recording and doing everything I can to stay relevant, or whatever that equivalency is. But the reason I moved back to New York is, like I said before, is really to play with other top level musicians of different styles. And I'm having a good time, and hopefully that's going to be more and more.
For more information on Alex Pope Norris, you'll find him on Facebook, Alex Norris 2. That's the Roman numeral 2. And for more information on trombonist Ed Neumeister, edneumeister.com.
Orange Grove Radio, brought to you by Canada's leading jazz publicity firm, features the latest and greatest in Canadian jazz. Join me, your host, Jenna Marie, in my quest to discover the recordings that have been shaping the Canadian jazz scene for the past decade and eavesdrop on interviews with established and emerging Canadian jazz stars. Impress your friends with exclusive behind-the-scenes scoops on upcoming releases by tuning in every single week. Orange Grove Radio plays on a variety of different radio stations across North America, so to tune in live, check our schedule at orangegrovepublicity.com. You can also listen to our episodes as podcasts on Mixcloud and Spotify by searching up Orange Grove Radio. If you want to join in on the conversation, ask us a question, or make some requests, you can do so by tweeting us at OG Publicity, and you can also follow us on social media on Instagram and Facebook at Orange Grove Publicity. I can't wait to introduce you to some incredible Canadian jazz and to play some of your absolute favorites. I'm Jenna Marie, and I'll see you soon. Bye-bye!
You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. I recently spoke with vocalist, lyricist, and composer Carmela Rapazzo. During the pandemic lockdown, she recorded her 7th project, Love and Other Difficulties, exploring the many aspects of love. Oscar Rizignoli on piano, Martin Masakowski on bass, and Doug Belote on drums.
You walk my way and brush my hand as my heart skips a beat. It leaves me breathless and confused. A kiss would mean defeat. Please, saints and angels, intervene and save me from this day. 'Cause thinking of you night and day, obsession now my fate.
So thank you for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for having me.
In listening to and reading about love and other difficulties, not only love, but longing for is the theme in this release.
Yes.
And to me, this is refreshing because it seems that there have been a number of releases by artists venting about their loss of freedom during lockdowns that are getting, in my opinion, undue attention. Would you talk to us about how these feelings of longing for and love developed and how you translated them into songs?
Well, to me, love is very complex and there are many different kinds of love. There's the love of one's spouse. There's the love of one's friend. There's the love of one's family. At some point, my cat will walk behind me. This period in time, there's been, just for me, I've had loss. I've had the loss of friends. I don't think about the pandemic as a loss of my freedom. I think of it as more of a loss of innocence and naivete. I think that people have had their heads in the sand and there's a lot of awakening going on. This record for me started out with, believe it or not, Sweet Sleep was, I think, the first song that I wrote for, not even thinking I was going to make a record. And Sweet Sleep, it's a lullaby and it is meant to put y'all to sleep. But it also has an undertone because I had a friend who was an actress and she would say to us all, sweet sleep, because she was an actressy kind of actress. And she passed And it's kind of like a little lullaby, and it is about longing for one's love, but it's also about the loss of love. And I have a couple of songs that are about the difficulties and the loss of love rather than the syrupy kind of love. But this period has been a real learning curve, even though throughout my life, I mean, even when I lived where you are living, I had friends when I was young who I lost. But for some reason, the last year and a half, 2 years, the politics, the way people have been toward each other has really rubbed people's nerves raw in a good way. I think people are maybe, I'm hoping, waking up. And this was a lot of the expression of that for me. But it's also, Cheryl, I tend to like the dark ballads. Yeah, that Cole Porter kind of.
Yes.
Billy Strayhorn. I mean, these were suffering people. They were not happy people. But out of them came this amazing beauty. And to me, that's what love is in a way. It's not that love is suffering. It's just that it can't always be about the roses. It's often, for real people, it's often about the thorns. And this is a little bit about that for me. Yes.
You started writing songs, formed your own trio, and recorded mostly original songs on 2005's The Girl Who Dreams Out Loud, your fourth album. Do you remember what the reception was to you, a singer, writing your own music? Oh, I can already hear it. Writing your own music for your own release.
Oh, baby. I'll tell you exactly what happened. That record was such a step away because I had always done these jazz standards records, and I had always been in trios and in big bands with old school jazz artists. So at that time, I was a good girl, and I was in this one big band where old school, where you would sit on the side of the stage and the band leader would call you up to do your number, and then you would go back to the side of the stage. Yes.
Yes.
And I was also the trio I was in with Herth Martinez. We did a lot of straight ahead work, and we were getting a lot of work in Los Angeles, which is not particularly, or at that time was not particularly rife with jazz clubs. And I was breaking into the local jazz scene in a way, had gone there from New York. Well, I made that record because I love the Great American Songbooks, but they get done a lot. And I started writing, and we made this record, and I released it. And at 8:30 in the morning on a Sunday, I got a phone call from somebody who I really admired in the jazz community, like a real old school, well-known jazz guy. And he said to me, "I just listened to your new album." I said, "Oh, what did you think?" And he said, "What were you thinking? You're going to ruin your career." And I said, "I have a career?" I didn't know what to say. It was a kind of a shock, because it was stay in the lines, you know, don't color outside the lines. But being the defiant little Sicilian that I am, I got more and more interested in original material, not just mine, even friends of mine who write really great original new music. And over the years, although I was thinking of making a jazz standards record with like strange and obscure things that nobody else listens to, for the most part, even when I gig, I always try and include as many original tunes as I can possibly do. And some gigs only original tunes. I think it's important. That was a tough, that was a very tough moment in my life, for sure.
I've heard the stories from not just artists, but from promoters for events and festivals. And yeah, they're looking for the standards, the crowd pleasers. But I say the repertoire continually needs refreshing. So I applaud what you and so many artists are doing, writing their own stuff.
Thank you.
Who is pianist and composer Oscar Rossignoli?
He is a young, well, he's in his 30s, so he's young.
That's young.
It is. He's from Honduras. He lives here in New Orleans, and he is a master. He has his master's in classical and in jazz as a musician. And he's an up-and-coming star, I think. I think he's extremely talented. He's got a solo project. He's a member of a trio here that's doing really interesting and innovative work as well. He's somebody to watch. Yeah. And I love working with him. He's wonderful.
Yeah, his new release is called Inertia. Like you, it is self-released. How did you two become collaborators?
I got to New Orleans about 6 years ago, and I was very spoiled, having lived in Los Angeles, New York City, and I lived for a short time in New Mexico, where there are some pretty amazing jazz musicians who are in semi-retirement in a way, like they're hiding out in the hills. But I've played with really, really great musicians that, because I always was taught to play with people who are really better than you or really great, because it brings you up. It teaches you how to expand your own craft. When I got here, I started going to all the clubs, listening to people, and there are so many great musicians here that it's mind blowing. But I was used to a certain style, and there's a lot of trad jazz here and not as much modern jazz. And I thought, well, you know, I guess I'm going to be learning trad jazz. And one day I got dragged, and I mean dragged, to an art market in a park here. And although that sounds kind of maybe corny in other cities, in New Orleans, we have some really beautiful parks, and artists set up these tents. And I mean, you used to see like Alan Toussaint there. I mean, it was like incredible people, because the community is curious and they're all into the arts here. So, but I was a snob and I got dragged to this art market because I thought it was going to be like little crafty things like clothespins made into dolls and things like that. And, you know, I'm a snob. But when we arrived, my ear got pulled, and I mean pulled, and there was a trio playing. And I said to my husband, well, you go look at the art. I'm going to go find out where that music is coming from. And there was this tent set up, and it was Oscar and a bass player here named James Singleton and a young drummer here named Brad Webb. And they were phenomenal. And I had met Singleton already at somebody's gig, and he's an amazing bass player. But at their break, I walked up to Oscar and I said, I need your phone number. And so we got together and we started just playing standards together. And then I started sliding my originals toward him. And on this last record, he had those two tunes, Endless Fall and Heartbeat. I had heard him play them as his compositions. And I asked him if I could write lyrics, because I was, especially Heartbeat, I could hear a theme that was happening in it. And it, again, I took it to kind of a dark place. For him, it literally was a time signature. That's what he wrote it about. He wrote it about Heartbeat and a time signature. But for me, it meant some sort of deep, dark longing in my theme. And the tune, Love Song, I had written the melody and the lyrics, and I could not find the voicings for it. You know, the chords that go with the melody. I couldn't find them in my head. And I put it in front of him and I said, fix this. do this for me, because he comes up with these very odd voicings, these unusual chord configurations, because it's almost like Oscar has three hands. He's so fast and facile. And that's how we started. And that's, I don't know if we'll be doing any writing together in the future, but those tunes, that was it. I mean, that I was really excited to be writing with somebody who's young and new and has great ideas. It was really inspirational for me.
And that is such a wonderful story, the way you two met. Really?
Yeah, I saw him the second time I ran into him. It's a small town, New Orleans. And I went to this amazing concert that was all Jelly Roll Morton compositions. And it was New Orleans Jazz Orchestra was putting it on. And he's not in that orchestra, but he was at the same concert. And after the concert was over, they had invited piano players to play the piano for the crowd. And he got up and he played a Jelly Roll Morton song, reading the sheet music, and it was spot on. And afterward, he came off the stage and I said to him, wow, that was completely spot on. And he said, I've never played this music before. He had knew nothing about Jelly Roll Morton.
But he had the intuition.
He did.
Yes.
He's really a talented guy. Really an interesting and talented guy.
Sound you make just like a sigh. It is as light as air. I'm quite certain you intended it to wound, and it penetrates me to my very core. But I'll take it and much more. Anticipating sounds you'll make, there is no rest once more. Unlike you, I will hold on to my life.
Well, as you said, you live in New Orleans now and at a time in New Mexico. Both cities have their beauty, but they also have their problems. Yeah. Crime, corruption, homelessness, and poverty.
Mm-hmm.
What has kept you in both cities as a community member and as a musician?
When I lived in New Mexico, we had a spot in the middle, you will love this, in the middle of nowhere, about 45 minutes outside of Santa Fe. And it was surrounded by mesas. It was a 5.5-acre dump of a farm that we did our Green Acres thing. We turned it into an organic income producing farm. And it was quiet and beautiful. And all along in this community, and I mean middle of nowhere, rusted trucks in fields, there were musicians who were hiding out and tucked in. And I met two musicians in Santa Fe who were great, great, great musicians, John Rengel and Larry Mitchell. And Larry produced something for me that got nominated for a New Mexico Jazz Award. I mean, you know, they're really great musicians. New Mexico is rife with problems. You know, it is so beautiful and so poverty stricken. And I got very involved with a project in order to raise consciousness and funds for the young people, homeless children, homeless teenagers in New Mexico. So New Mexico, it's about the hope, you know, it's about, it's beautiful, It's intense. It's the weather is really extreme there. The dryness bleaches your bones out. It seems that on a spiritual level, whatever it is that you are dealing with internally becomes big and inflated and in your face. It forces change on you, you know, and I love that. I love having to deal with my own demons. New Orleans is a whole other story. New Orleans is, I have always felt also, no matter where I lived, I've always felt slightly out of sync. When I got to New Orleans, I felt normal. I felt like, oh, I'm home. It is the strangest city I think I've ever lived in, with the strangest people who are not of, and I think maybe the UFOs just all dropped their peoples right here at some point. But the music scene here, jazz was born here. Jazz, Black American music was born here. And it is in everyone's skin here, everyone's soul here. So it's in the streets. You can't go anywhere here and not hear music. So there's this incredible beauty. And, you know, the Mississippi River is like this here. It's like this ribbon that runs through the city. And you get so turned around here. I mean, like, you think you're supposed to take a right turn and you're supposed to take a left turn because you can't figure out where you're at because of the river. So there's this energy here that is all beautiful. And the food is crazy, crazy, crazy good. But the ancestry here and the ghosts here and the energy here is also, unfortunately, you know, been taken advantage of. And there's a lot of corruption here. And there is more crime here than anywhere I've ever lived. I mean, and I lived in New York in the 70s, you know. So how did this happen? How did this beautiful and vibrant and very important port city become so corrupt and so used, you know? And it's crazy here. The different levels of crazy here, but you'll love it. You come here in spite of the heat and the humidity and the hurricanes and the, you know, the lack of services post hurricanes, even pre hurricanes, but there's a love here. There's even a smile can save your life here. Even when confronted with somebody who's angry, a smile can save your life here. Everybody greets everybody on the streets. I know all my neighbors and they know me. You know, people look out for you here. So there is this juxtaposition of all of those things that make us uncomfortable and all of those things that make us feel at home. And New Orleans is my home.
For more information on Carmela Rapazzo, carmelarapazzo.com. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host The Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.